What is up? What is happening? Welcome to the James Kennedy Podcast. I just want to say thanks to all of you lovely new subscribers. Thanks so much to everyone that's joined the podcast lately. I really appreciate you. And of course, I appreciate you guys who've been here since day one as well. I just appreciate all of you for listening. We're going to lighten things up a little bit on this episode because, you know, we're living in pretty heavy times and we talk about a lot of heavy subjects on this podcast, as we should do. But, you know, sometimes you need a break and there's so much good shit happening around the world as well. And so many super talented people that I want to chat to. So we're going to cool things down a little bit this week and get back to talking about the thing that I love and the thing that you love, music. And speaking of which, before we get into the conversation today, James Kennedy and the Underdogs have got an amazing announcement coming this very Monday at 9 a.m. This is a biggie, it's one you've been waiting for, and it's a good one. But you know, if you follow me on social media, you're not going to see anything I post because I'm effectively shadow banned on every platform now, so if you don't already know, we've got a cool group called the Secret Society, where it's just a mailing list. You whack in your name, your email address, and your city, and then we let you know when we got cool stuff happening near your town. So, if you want to know what the awesome new announcement is going to be on Monday morning, the best thing to do is whack your email address into the mailing list, and we'll let you know before anybody else. And then that way, you know, you haven't got to worry about whether Facebook or Instagram is going to let you know what's going on in the world. You know, which it mostly doesn't, unless, you know, people like me are paying the money. So you can join the Secret Society mailing list at jameskennedystuff.com/tribe. Simple as, man. And I'm always plugging in my Insta stories as well on Instagram at jameskennedyuk. Give me a follow there for what it's worth. And then we can keep you gorgeous people updated with all the cool stuff we got happening over the next few months because, man, we can't wait to share the news with you all. So get on it. All right, let's get down to business because I love this band so, so much and it is an honor to have them on the phone today, calling in live from Paris in the middle of their huge international tour, which sees the band do their magical and wonderful thing all across Europe, the US and Canada. I'm joined by Ryan Goldemond, singer, songwriter and guitarist of the incredible Mother Mother. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, bro. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
No, not at all, man. Anytime. I mean, I've got so much stuff I want to get into with you today. But the most important thing, the thing we got to get off the bat straight away is, how is the tour going? How are the shows going, man? This is a big one.
It's the first tour of this album cycle, so it always takes a minute to get to your sea legs. But we're in the groove now. And wherever we've fallen short on any of these gigs, the audience has more than made up for it. They're just incredible. The crowds that are coming out, like so much life in these venues, so much passion and emotion. It's wonderful.
Well, I can't imagine you guys falling short because you guys are seasoned professionals at this now and your live show is badass. But I mean, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about, man. It takes a few shows to get the new tracks bedded in. And the new tracks you're talking about are songs off the brand new album Grief Chapter, which is out now. I'm sure many of your fans are already loving it as much as I do. So I'd love to get a lowdown on the record, man. You know, what are the songs about? You know, how did it come together? What were the inspirations? What were the obstacles? What was the recording process? Give us a lowdown on Grief Chapter.
A lot of the writing for the album happened over the last couple of years while we were touring, which is kind of nice. Like, it was a very exciting time seeing so much of the world that we'd never seen, kind of acquainting with this new sport of touring. And so a lot of inspiration, a lot of high energy, and, you know, just taking that into the writing process in green rooms and hotel rooms, trying to fit it in, right? Because there wasn't a lot of time at home, which I found, I always like writing like that. It's just a little bit more charged with curiosity because you're out of your element. And so I just found that part of the process really gratifying, just the writing of the song. Sometimes it's like pulling teeth and you really have to pry these songs out of existence. And they can be very stubborn and resistant. But this time it was very fluid. And as a songwriter, just like so grateful for that when the channel opens. And then it was time to bring it to the studio. And we were very fortunate to camp out at the Warehouse Studios in Vancouver in Gastown, which is Brian Adams' revered studio. It's a beautiful brick industrial building with lots of natural lights spilling through and just a great live room, all the vintage mics and preamps, and there's a tape machine. And we were there, yeah, for 100 days. So we really got to kind of like, we kept saying like, let's make our pet sounds, just symbolizing like, let's just not leave any stone unturned and be obsessive, be indulgent, and make the record that we want to make. And in terms of themes, death, I think, is at the center of this album, and mortality and grief, obviously. But they're used more as reference point or signposts to live and to kind of wake up to the miracle of the day and carpe diem, that kind of thing. So it might be ostensibly morose, this album, thematically, but it's not, in fact. I think underneath the surface, it's quite, hopefully, empowering.
100%. It is an incredible album. I mean, I got so many questions to ask. As a musician and album maker myself, I've done about 7 albums now, produced myself and everything. So I've got questions coming at you from that angle as well that I'm super interested in, because your stuff is dense, man. But before we get into that, but the techie stuff, where did the name come from? What's behind the name?
A Grief Chapter?
Yeah.
So there's a song called Grief Chapter, and it closes the album. And I wrote that song after texting with a friend who was going through the loss of his father and some other friends in his life. So it was like all these people in his life were dying. And I said to him in his text thread, "Sounds like you're in a grief chapter." And he, being a songwriter, said, "Yeah, I am. But more importantly, that's a great title for an unborn song."
Right.
And, you know, should be written. And so put the phone down and started writing the song, and I just kind of poured out of the guitar. A lot of the lyrics I just like took from our text conversation. In verse 2, I'm talking about feeding your mother and she looks like an angel. And those are his words. And he said, "Everything looks different now." Kind of, you know, that once you cross that line after losing someone, the world changes color. And so it was cool. I like it when songs are written like that. As a byproduct of life, as opposed to premeditation in songwriting. I much prefer that when the songs, come out of the lived experience. And so, it's just a great, beautiful, intimate, personal song, touches on life and death, perfect way to close the album, and just encapsulates the themes more broadly very well, I think.
Yeah, it's a great track, that one in particular, actually, man. And it's interesting with songs, isn't it? That as soon as you put them out there, regardless of what the intention was behind the writing of it or how it came together, as soon as you put it out there, it kind of takes on a life of its own in the hearts and ears of everyone else that listens to it. Like, it can mean different things to different people at different times in their life, can't it? And I definitely got the strong existential themes coming through a lot of the lyrics on this record. And that resonates strongly with me because I'm well into all that stuff myself. But in terms of the music as well, I mean, you guys are so eclectic. I mean, you're a fascinating band because you never know what's going to come next with you guys, even within the same song, you know what I mean? And as I was listening to the record, I was just thinking, who do these guys listen to? Who are their influences? Because there's so much stuff in there. But it's all kind of put together in a way that is distinctly you guys. You sound like nobody else, you know what I mean? So this is probably like a too basic a question, but I mean, who were the influences on this record and who are you guys listening to?
Well, I think the band, the sound and my songwriting sensibilities could probably be boiled down to like 3 pillars, that being the Beatles, and then the traditional musics of jazz and classical, and then the Pixies.
Right.
I think those 3 energies kind of come together and I think define a lot of what we go for. We like the harmonic and the melodic complexities, and that's kind of born from sort of jazz modality. And we like the bent, strange, eccentric, androgynous vocal stylings of the Pixies.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles are just masters at unconventional song arrangements and just making the most out of a 3-minute song, making it feel like such an epic journey when it's in fact just so brief. Those are, I think, notable.
Yeah, well, I can definitely hear all of that in your music and a gazillion other things as well. But you mentioned that the album was written on the road as well. You know, I'd be interested to know what influence that had as an indirect influence, you know, being at a different place all the time, different hotel room, you know, different time zone, different headspace. What effect did that have, if any, on the making of this record?
Yeah, I think whatever you're going through at the time of writing songs influences how you write songs. It's just like the order of the universe, I think. And I kind of have a thought about life having been so good for us over the past few years, espousing ruminations of impermanence and finality and the fragility of life. Like when shit gets good, I think it's easy to start thinking existentially because it reminds you that good things eventually end. And so I could, you know, look back and see how those themes organically came out of a high moment in life.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, man. And like, this is your ninth album now as well. And yeah, in quite a short period of time, like, you guys have been very creatively fertile to put out nine records. Of the nature of music that you do that is so creatively charged and so eclectic and so dense, you know, that's a lot of creative output in a short space of time. So how do you guys manage to stay so creatively charged and so creatively productive, you know, whilst touring and doing all the other things that, you know, one must do these days? You know, do you guys ever go writer's block? Is it a struggle, or have you got a process? I mean, how do you guys manage to stay so creatively productive?
I've kind of disavowed writer's block. I don't really believe in it. I think it's more a fear of being bad. And so the pressure of that paralyzes someone. So it's deeper than that. It's dismantling the fear of not meeting an external expectation and getting back to the root of why you're creative in the first place, which is a really pure, innocent, joyous occasion. It shouldn't be for anything but the sheer joy of that alchemy. And when you are connected to that in an authentic way, I think that's when the good songs just come out anyway. So it's sort of like, it's a bit of a Jedi mind trick. You have to not care about writing good songs in order to write good songs. So that's how I deal with writer's block. And I think in terms of the prolificness, if you stop writing songs, they travel somewhere else and inhabit themselves in a different writer. So it's really wise just to always stay greased and acquainted with your muse, whatever that may be. And also, it's just funner. Life is better when I'm writing songs by like a huge margin. It's like, it's almost like life is pale when I'm not. And when I am, it's technicolor. And so it's almost just like a self-preservation mechanism for like good mental health.
Oh, yeah. Well, I totally hear that one, man. I mean, I tried to get out of the game for a bit. You know, in my last band, we were hitting it pretty hard. We did like five albums in 5 years, plus a bunch of touring and stuff like that. And it was really hard. The toll it took on us at that level, you know, with no backing, doing everything independently and stuff like that. The grind of it all and the constant disappointment and rejection and battles at every step, you know, it took its toll. And I got to the point where I was just burned out and depressed and totally disillusioned. And I was like, right, that's it. I need to step back from this because this is just taking everything else from my life that's good. And I need to reassess what I'm doing this for. And I actually was intending on stepping right out of music and reassessing my life and possibly never coming back to it. And it was at that exact point that this album just flooded out of me. You know, the most personal and cathartic, therapeutic album I've ever done. Almost like a journal, and it really helped me through that process. And it was very ironic that the thing that I was trying to avoid or get away from was the thing that actually saved me and helped me make sense of that whole kind of existential crisis point of my life. So it's kind of like a blessing and a curse, isn't it? It's like the thing that brings us the most joy can also bring us the most pain, but it's ultimately the thing that saves us as well at our lowest points, you know?
Yeah, and that's when it's the best, when it's raw and real and private and something like a diary. Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, what I love about you guys as well is the fact that, like, these days, with the industry being what it is, and all of us have to kind of be very market savvy now, don't we, with the way that we present ourselves online, you know, because we're all our kind of own branding agencies now as we exist pretty much through the medium of social media. And I think the pressure now to kind of know who you are, to know who you speak to, and to just stay within that lane and within that niche is very much more prevalent now than perhaps it used to be. But even back in the days when the industry was the only way that things got done, you know, people would get, artists would get told really early on in their career, like, you know, you need to know who you are. Are you heavy metal? Are you hip hop? You know, what are you? Are you pop? Are you pop punk? you can't keep bouncing all over the map. You got to pick a lane and stick at it because it's confusing people. We need to know who we're marketing you to. We need to know who you're speaking for. Stop being so damn experimental. Stop being so adventurous and changing genre from one album or one song to the next. If you want to succeed in the marketplace, you got to play the game. But you guys are a gorgeous, glorious rebuttal to that, because you are the opposite of all of that. Like, you guys will flip genres many times within the same song. Every album or every song with you guys is a beautiful box of surprises. You never know what you're going to get. And yet you've got a wonderfully loyal and global fan base. You've had great commercial success, you know, so you kind of prove that that actually is bullshit. You know, that whole idea that you can't be too eclectic. And if you look at some of the biggest artists that have changed the game over the years, you know, David Bowie, Prince, and many, many others, you know, these are the guys that flipped whatever genres they wanted to and they did their own thing. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that attitude is bullshit, or are you guys just doing your thing and it just worked out?
I mean, I don't know if it's bullshit. I mean, if what feels good to you is sticking in one lane, then I think you should. I just think you shouldn't be formulaic because you think that's going to make you successful. And conversely, I don't think you should be unconventional because that makes you successful.
Yeah.
I think you should just try to figure out what turns you on and what stirs your own soul. And do your best to act as an ambassador of that, whether that's online or in an interview or wherever you are representing this, you know, this magic that you possess and are trying to share with the world. I really don't know how to like do social media well. I think we, like so many artists, are confounded by how fast it's moving and how demanding it is. But again, it's just like, you just have to like let go and do your best and try to present your art form as honestly and I think consistently as possible. Like, consistency is the trick in this game. It's like, keep writing, keep posting, keep getting out there, and just don't stop, and eventually you'll have really positive punctuations along that journey. Like, for us, it took 15 years before we had our break. And you know, and there was so many opportunities to quit up until that point. So many iffy moments. But we just kept going and just kept putting records out every 2 years, like clockwork, kept posting. Whether or not it was clumsy or graceful, we just kind of kept doing it. And because of that, we were able to meet our miracle in 2020 via TikTok. And like, you know, looking ahead over the next 40 years, I'm just going to keep doing it. If I get 40 years, and I just trust that things like that will happen. And it could be 10 years apart, you know, it could be 2 years apart. It doesn't really matter when. I just know that it will happen if you just keep going.
Yeah, I love it. Beautifully put, man. And it's interesting that you say that you don't really know how to do social media, because you guys are fucking crushing it on social media. And you've also been a recipient of that coveted holy grail that all artists and everybody online in the world wants to get, which is to go viral on TikTok. So I really want to get into that, if you don't mind. I want to find out what it's like when that happens. Is it a game changer, or is it an overhyped thing? It doesn't make a lot of difference. Or is it awesome for a day or two and then it's gone again and it's back to life as normal? What's it like when that happens to an artist, man? What goes down?
That was a total game changer. Yeah, absolutely transformative. And we thank our lucky stars. It was so inexplicable, so organic. Like, we weren't even on TikTok. We barely knew what it was. I remember being in the studio and getting word that like something was happening on this strange app. And I was going to just download the app and make an account and snoop around. And everyone in the studio was like, don't do it. It's like, you know, like Chinese spyware. And, I was like, really? Well, I think I have to, because there's some like activity. So I like made an account, made a really stupid TikTok, and I went looking around, and you know, there's like thousands of teenagers all around the world, like vibing out to mother music in their bedrooms, hanging with their friends, just like in cosplay, this whole different young Gen Z community, gender fluid, goth, cosplay, alt culture. It was just like looking into like a parallel universe. And at first we didn't really know what that would equate to. Like, is this kind of like a flash or a phase? Does this actually mean real fans who want to buy real tickets and have a real experience with the band and the venue? And so it was all just kind of unknown and very mysterious and a big experiment. So we started to engage and try to connect, and that connection felt authentic. And it seemed as though something special was forming between these people and the band and the music that wasn't just like, you know, a viral cat video that would be forgotten imminently. But the true test was like getting out on the road. And so when we finally did, it was just like wherever we went, whether it was like Helsinki or America or South America, like 1,000 to 3,000 folks would show up in this young demographic, this very individual, unconventional, creative, beautiful culture. And yeah, it just blew us away. And it's been like that ever since. Like tonight in Paris, we'll play the, what is this venue called? The Olympia. And it's about 3,000 people, and it's just about sold out. I think we sold 2,500 tickets. So
wow.
And the last time we played Paris was probably 250 people pre-pandemic.
Man, that is nuts. So this is no joke then. This is the big deal that people make out that it is.
It's changed our lives and reinvigorated our career. And it gave us a new lease on life. Musically, as a band, interpersonally, creatively, everything. And it's like the, whatever the success or even the financial gain or just like being out there in the world as a working band, that's like not the thing that is exciting. It's just how beautiful I think the connection with this audience is and how the music feels like a real force of good. Like there's a real wholesome, like positive advocacy for mental health and accepting yourself and individuality as an aura to these songs and this fan base, which has just made us better people and made us more sensitive and smart and compassionate and heart space driven. We're more heart led as a byproduct of all this. So it's funny, the success has actually reduced our thirst for success and centered us more in human heart-based triumph, which is just the connection and I guess love, you know, for lack of a better word.
Man, what a great story. And it couldn't have happened to a better band as well. I mean, that's kind of like the icing on the cake, isn't it? I mean, if it happens to some kind of major label bubblegum manufacturer pop band, then it doesn't have the same underdog sense to it, you know? But you guys do such great music and you do it for the right reasons. And, you know, the fact that it's happened to you guys is just a beautiful bit of universal justice, you know what I mean? And it actually happened to a friend of mine as well, a friend of mine who was on the metal scene. They've been going for about 25 years over here. A band called Skindred, awesome fucking band, man. And completely unbeknown to themselves, they went viral on TikTok. They had a dance that someone had put together and it fucking took off on TikTok. They didn't even know, same as yourself. I don't even know if they were on TikTok. But, fast forward a few months later, they're number 2 in the album charts and then they headlined fucking Wembley Arena for the first time.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it really does make a difference, man. It's TikTok stuff that people talk about. It ain't no joke, you know?
Yeah, it's special too when it's so organic, like, this industry is just so full of strategizing success. And when it comes from a mystical, inexplicable force, I think it makes it much sweeter.
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that it's actually turned into tangible, you know, boots on the ground, like people turning up to the shows and stuff rather than it just being a strictly online thing, really does show the very real power of it. And I think it's testament to just how much the music industry has changed, hasn't it? I mean, what a bizarre state of affairs that is, that something like that can happen without any budget, you know, no marketing team behind it. It wasn't planned. It wasn't strategized. It just happened, as you said, organically and completely unbeknown to yourselves. What a bizarre world we now live in, you know what I mean? And I'd love to get your thoughts on the music industry, because it has changed so much in the time that we've both been doing our thing. You know, gone are the days now of, you know, you having to come out through a label if you're an artist. You know, you can now make your own record and put it out yourselves and promote yourselves online. What are your thoughts on that? You know, do you think we've lost something through not having the industry that we used to have? Do you think it's harder for artists now, easier, or just a different set of problems? What are your thoughts?
It's probably just the way it's supposed to be. I kind of have like that evolutionary kind of way of thinking. But yeah, we've seen lots of shifts. You know, it was CDs when we were coming up. So CDs and like Napster. And so we really were there for the segue into streaming platforms, which I think toppled the industry in a certain way. But I think in kind of a good way, because it just sort of like humbled the whole beast and it made it more of a trade. It's like, I don't think anybody should be making squillions of dollars for doing anything, really, to be honest. Like, I think the ceiling, the financial ceiling should lower, and just the fact that bands needed to like get out and play more live in order to earn their salt and earn their keep, I think was a good thing. And it keeps you honest, you know, and it keeps you in check with what you're capable of. And now it's just crazy with the social media and the TikTok and the Bible. I think it's too bad that like A&R people are on their phones looking for kids in bedrooms who have a moment online and are signing them instead of like going out to shows and having that transcendental experience in a venue. There's so many pros and there's so many cons. All I know is it's just going to keep changing for better and for worse. But that's just the nature of technology. That's the nature of art. Art is chaotic. It does evolve. And it's an uncomfortable process a lot of the time. I think it's sort of the beauty of it.
Yeah, well, I've been a big ambassador for the new model for a long time now. And it was kind of a central tenet to what I wrote about in my book, Noise Damage, was about how the pitfalls that I talk about as an artist coming up in the old model no longer have to exist now for an artist thriving in the new model, you know? Where you can make your own records and put it out yourself without having to be beholden to anybody at all, you know, which is a wonderful and empowering and very important thing that we shouldn't take for granted. But the problem that we've got now, and I've mentioned this on the podcast many times before, because it is the big problem, is in this new digital utopia, how the hell do you get heard above the noise of everybody else on Earth who's also now got the same platform and the same tools? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's probably always been hard to get heard, because in the 70s, it was hard to get heard because there wasn't enough noise, because you had to have a deal to make a record. So just the people that, you know, had the luxury of making noise got heard and typically got signed. They might not have done well, but they typically got signed. And so now there's too much noise. So I think it's just always been hard. I think it's just near impossible to make it. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but it's probably good to have like, you know, a peripheral plan B. I never expected it to go this way. Like I wasn't pessimistic, but I wasn't so cocky as to be certain as to not have a day job until I didn't have to have one. I was cooking eggs and cooking breakfast for people. And then luckily I had an employer that would let me take time off and go on tour. And I just kept doing that until the scales tipped. And I didn't have to have that day job anymore. But yeah, I don't know. Like, would you recommend someone getting into the music industry and trying to become a star right now?
I would probably echo a lot of what you said. I would say definitely do it, because if it's in your blood and you have to do it, you're going to do it anyway. I mean, you know, I didn't make a penny out of anything for like 10 years, you know what I mean? But I still did it anyway, which is the right reason to do it. I mean, anyone that gets into this because they think it's going to be a good career choice is doing it for the wrong reason. And they're probably going to be very naive and set themselves up for a lot of pain. But I think definitely be realistic and consider that this is a very volatile, difficult industry that's very unfair a lot of the time. You know, I know so many great, talented songwriters who work their ass off who just can't catch a break. So I think having a fallback is probably a sensible thing to do. But I mean, those of us that have got to do it have got to do it, you know, regardless.
Yeah. And I think it's good to like frame what it is. It's not a means to be successful. It is a means to have more joy in life. This relationship with creativity, with writing, with your muse, whatever it is, you know, keep it in the space of a hobby, because we love our hobbies. We cherish them. They're sacred places. And then when the hobby mutates into a vocation, then the magic starts to dissipate. And so that is the tragedy. It doesn't matter if you're successful or not. When you lose that spark with your muse, then it's over anyway. So I think just always keeping your relationship with your writing, with your art fresh and magical is the key. And then whether or not you're successful, it doesn't really matter, because then at least you'll have that. Like that will always be amazing.
Yeah, music is supposed to be the beauty and the joy in a very otherwise difficult and challenging life, isn't it? You know what I mean? The second it becomes something else, it's a sad day, I think. You know, that's supposed to be there to save you. It certainly always saved me at my lowest points. Like when I was in school and I was the outcast kid getting bullied, you know, I had my guitar to come back to. I had my music to listen to. I had my band to jam with on the weekend. And like, that stayed with me ever since, man. You know, at my lowest points, I journaled an album out of it, you know, and just sitting back listening to a record and losing yourself in the meditation of a guitar practice or something, or expressing whatever you got to express in the form of a song and then setting it free into the world. I think that's a beautiful thing. The second that turns into something else, it's a sad thing.
Yeah. I think like where the angst comes from and the frustration is because everything you just described is so special that when you achieve that, the yearning to share it is so strong. That for me, like when I write a new song that I know came from the right place and is good and has healing powers, is a force of good, and I myself am obsessed with, I just want to share it so bad. Like I just want as many people to hear it as possible. And when they don't, like when a song that you know is great and you really believe in just kind of falls under the radar, it's heartbreaking. And so I think that is much in part why people get so so torn up about making it or not, because they believe in what they do and they just want other people to experience it. And the idea of them not is feels like a great tragedy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, man. I've seen that tragedy so many times, and it really is a tragedy when that happens. You see so much talent and great art just fall under the radar, you know? Really is a travesty, man. What are your thoughts then, speaking about the music industry, on AI? Because that is going to be, whether we like it or not, the next big seismic change. Do you think that's going to be the death blow that everyone's making out is going to be? What do you think?
I think I don't have a lot of well-formulated thoughts. I don't think about it very much, if I'm being honest, but I think about like asking AI to like edit all my drums and I get really excited, or like, you know, like lining up all the consonants between a stack of gang vocals and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, I don't get at all excited about AI writing my song. Like to me, that's just, I'm always going to need that. Whether or not AI at large could write better songs than me, I kind of don't care. It's like, I'll always have this sacred practice, which, you know, like I said, turns my world technicolor. So I would never hand that over to a robot, but I would certainly use the robot to do some of that more laborious work.
100%. That would be great, DJ, if I, to have a robot cut it. If I could have Terminator do my drums for me, that would be, oh my God, so good. Make sure all the bass is in time while I go and get a coffee. That'd be amazing. My worry, I guess, is that the industry is going to much prefer to have a robot churning out 1,000 songs that never gets tired or never gives you an attitude problem, rather than paying an actual songwriter that's got needs and needs to be paid. But I think we're probably far off from that. I think sync music and library music might be the first one to go because it's quite generic and you can't tell anyway. I think actual songwriting, I think, is probably a fantasy at this point. I don't think we've got anything to worry about. But yeah, I mean, as you said earlier on the conversation, change is the only constant. So I suppose, who knows what's right around the corner, man. But hey, as long as we keep doing our thing, it shouldn't matter too much anyway.
Yeah, I think like most people listen to fairly artificial music as it is anyway. Like, it's pop music for a reason. So even if most humans, just like most humans like eat fast food, like most people do the thing that everybody does. And so even if AI ends up writing top 40 that most of the population consume on playlists and just kind of like distractedly, that's okay, because there's always going to be a niche of people that love music more deeply than that, and they'll want to connect to the human spirit. So like maybe that audience and those artists, they will be empowered even more so because they're up against this great widespread opposition. Like, it could make for a really potent but smaller experience, which could be really cool.
I think you've tapped on something there. I mean, I'm a firm believer that the greatest musical movements have always come out of struggle and resistance, you know, like the blues or hip-hop or punk rock or something. You know, maybe it might be the not the threat that we think it is, but it might be the spark that causes the next new, you know, beautiful musical movement. So maybe that's what'll happen. Well, I'm so glad that we've managed to get through all these subjects, man, whilst I've got you here, because I don't just want this to be just like another promo thing for plugging the album, because I'm sure you guys have got tons of that and you don't need to do that at this point. But I'm aware that I can't keep it for too much longer, so we have got to bring it back to what you guys are doing before we wrap up. Like I say, you're sort of just at the start now of this massive leg. You're gaining everywhere, all around Europe, and then you're doing the US and Canada. What can people expect from the new live show? What have you guys got up your sleeve?
We put a lot of pride into constructing a set list that is pretty epic and weaves together like kind of just one long song that honors every epoch of the band. So we pulled from all the different albums, and there's, I think, these really beautiful like talk moments and connecting to the crowd. The light show is really incredible. We tried to level up there. And honestly, like, for people that come to the show, I think one of the things that they'll like the most is the spirit of the audience, the spirit of their own community. It feels like the audience steals the show in a way, in the best way, in a way that we really are okay with, just because it's really more about human connection and a positive frequency at a gig. If someone's coming, they should be most excited about that, I think.
That's beautiful. And how has it been your experience as a band? And like I said, last time you came to Paris, it was, I think it was 150, and now it's like 2,500. I'm guessing it's been like that on the previous few shows, and it's probably going to be like that on all of them. What's that like for you guys then, as an experience of coming over and playing some of the older songs to like this completely new audience of people on that are loving it? What does that feel like for you?
It's a dream come true. Absolutely. And it's a really reasonable jump. Like, we feel like we can own it on a stage that big, playing for that many people. I mean, we've been kind of like rehearsing for this for the past, 20 years, in a sense. And back in Canada, we were playing rooms that big for, well over a decade. So we're a seasoned live band, and we know what we're doing in rooms this size. But we never thought that we would be in Prague or Paris or Oslo on these stages. We thought we'd kind of just be a Canadian band that did well. So just to be you know, given the world like that is just such a gift that it's hard to articulate gratitude in the right way for.
Well, I think the gratitude takes the form of the beautiful music that you guys pump into people's hearts night after night from the stage all over the place, you know? So I think you got that one covered. And what is next for Mother Mother? What's happening? I know you guys are like, you got a lot to think about at the moment. You got this massive sprawling tour for the rest of the year. But what's happening beyond that? Are there any plans, or are you just riding the wave and seeing what happens?
Definitely a robust touring year, and more music is coming for sure. There's a lot of new songs on the table right now. I just feel like we're just not going to slow down. And just in speaking of like what we can do to like give back for this gift, I feel like it's just making more music, and just not taking a break and putting all the love and all the richness of this experience into these new songs, these new unborn songs. I can't wait to hear them. I can't wait to share them, whatever they are, because I know they're going to come from a great place. And so that feels like the most potent way to kind of give back, just more music for the fans.
Oh, well, I'm personally glad to hear it. And I know that everyone listening to this is going to be super glad to hear that as well, man. So Grief Chapter, if you haven't heard it, it is out now and it is absolutely exceptional. Do not doubt me on it. Just go out and play it and download it and buy it and do whatever you got to do to get it in your ears, embrace it in your heart and your dancing feet, and you can thank me later. It is available in all usual places right now, and the band can be found on Instagram at Mother Mother Music. Give them a follow them on TikTok, get involved, buy a ticket. They probably come into your town because they're playing absolutely bloody everywhere. Go along, you will not see a better live show this year, I promise you. Ryan, thank you so much for your time, man. This has been a fascinating chat. It's great to meet you in person. I really appreciate you taking an hour out to speak with me today, and just best wishes with everything ahead, man. You know, long may you reign and prosper.
Thank you so much. I totally love this. Thanks for having me, and all the best to you too.
Thank you, Ryan. Best wishes with the show tonight, man. It's great to meet you, man.
Yeah, you too. Take good care. Bye.
And there he goes, Ryan Goldemon from the incredible Mother Mother. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I did, man. Isn't that guy on the ball? Like, super articulate. Made some great points, and I just love his general ethos and outlook on art and songwriting and music and what really matters, you know? Clearly doesn't share the same kind of cynical, nihilistic outlook that I do about AI and the music industry, and he actually had a refreshing perspective on that, which I think is probably way closer to the truth than my doom and gloom, you know? Yeah, I really enjoyed that conversation, man. And like, a great, great band. If you haven't yet heard Mother Mother, man, they got 9 albums. Go and check them out because they are really, really damn good. And by the time you listen to this, they will still be touring. So grab yourself a ticket because they are just as good, if not better, on stage. Honestly, it's an extravaganza you don't want to miss. It's a feast for the ears and the eyes and the soul. As I said, their new album, Grief Chapter, is out now. It is available everywhere, and it is absolutely amazing. Go and check it out. They are available to be followed on their Instagram at Mother Mother Music, and do go and find them on TikTok as well, because they're absolutely smashing it over there. And if you're one of the millions of Mother Mother fans that's come over to this conversation to listen to the podcast for the first time, thank you so much for joining us. Please do hit that subscribe button, because we got new conversations with new artists and new game changers and great thinkers and great minds and world changers every single week on this thing. So don't miss an episode. Don't let the algorithms get between you and a good time. Hit that subscribe button. As always, if you're listening to it on YouTube, leave a comment, get involved in the conversation there. Give us a star rating and a review if you're on Apple and all that stuff. I feel like I hate nagging people for this stuff, but it ain't hard, is it really? It's certainly not as hard as making a fucking podcast. So, you know, help me out, man. And I will see you sexy people next week for another great conversation with another awesome dude. Have a great week. Get some Mother Mother in your earlobes. And I will see you on the flip side. Love you loads.